Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Really excited about our next guest. Great guy. Very talented senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Co-host of the Crossover Podcast. And maybe most importantly, the NBA's Baron of Brooklyn. The one and only Howard Beck. At Howard Beck on Twitter. Mr. Beck, what's up, buddy?
Doing well. How are you, my friend?
Clearly, I've been watching Bridgerton because I went straight to Baron, right? If your name could alliterate with Earl or Duke, you would have been even higher. You would have ranked even higher. I'm good, man. I have a surprise for you. Are you ready?
I'm nervous now, but yes, I guess.
What the Beck?
we got it. Here, let's do one more just so you can really take it in.
What the Beck?
Go. It's pure
That's
magic.
Phenomenal. That is fantastic. I need that on my voicemail.
we can send it to you. So Howard, you know, some news, some talk. LeBron talking about his minutes. Where do you come down on the idea, the notion of LeBron James at some point, I would presume, needing to play fewer minutes or not at this stage of his career?
This is one of those unknowable things, right? Like, we have an immense amount of technology now at our disposal, not yours and mine, but the teams do. And LeBron's personal trainer, the Lakers as an organization, they have all these ways to measure fatigue and, you know, guys, you know, hydration levels and all these things that can try to help you, help guide you day to day with a guy's load, right? We talk about load management. It's not just about resting guys. It's about actually seeing what the load is on their bodies and determining based on all these different factors, some of which are measurable through the wearables that they stick in their jerseys and all that for practice, to say, well, you know, this guy might be a little fatigued. This guy might be in danger of getting hurt. Let's back off a little bit. Those are the things that we're not privy to, and so we have these discussions in a vacuum. And the bottom line is, you have to, and that the players have to rely on the idea that teams are using this technology and what we know in the year 2021 that we didn't know in 1990 to the best of their to their, not just to their advantage, but in interest of their health. So I don't know if they need to back off. My instinct tells me that LeBron in year 18 at age 36 probably shouldn't be playing 38 or 40 minutes a game. But LeBron's also defied everything that we seemingly know or thought we knew about player longevity and then how deep into your 30s you could be as an elite player, especially playing, you know, on the perimeter for the most part. So it's hard to say. I do think that, yeah, when you have LeBron James at the stage of his career, you should probably err on the side of caution, because the point is to be winning games this year in June and July, which sounds weird to say. But you're usually, you know, you're gearing toward the playoffs. It's not about the regular season.
He is Howard Beck, dispensing wisdom, and I'm Bill Ryder, dispensing self-control by not pushing the "What the Beck" button after every single statement that that Howard makes, even though I want to. So Howard, there's a lot of there's obviously a lot of basketball to be played, and the NBA awards reality is that you have to see this thing through. But you know, if the season were to end today, or as we sort of near the tortured All-Star break, do you have a sense of an order? Or a grouping or a ranking of the MVP reality on your ballot, you know, were you to have to submit it at this point?
Right. Well, we bandy this discussion about so often that we always have to kind of have this in mind, right? We know the season's not going to end today, and 1,000 things are going to happen between now and the end that could change all of this. But we're about a third of the way through the season. I think it's fair to say that it's a two-way race at the moment between LeBron and Joel Embiid. And that's not any sign of disrespect toward Kawhi Leonard or Dame Lillard or anybody else that you know, somebody's favorite, Jokic, you know, all these guys, you know, Curry. Like, they're all fairly in the discussion, but it depends on which version of this discussion you're having. If you want to say a guy's having an MVP-caliber season and it's based on his production, sure, that's a list of, like, seven or eight guys. If you want to say who can realistically win MVP, which is how I usually approach this question, it's a smaller group, because I am a firm believer that, you know, 2016-17, the Russell Westbrook year aside, we have a decades of precedent that, you know, the MVP comes from one of the top two or three teams, not just in the league or at least in a conference. So if you're on a contending team, okay, you're in the discussion. If you're not on a contending team, but you have great stats, Luka Doncic, then you could be on the ballot, but you can't be at the top. So to me, the Mavericks still underachieving. Luka, who was the preseason favorite, the Mavericks are in ninth as we speak today. If he's on my ballot at all, it's going to be fourth or fifth because they haven't won enough. That's the valuable part of MVP. And right now, LeBron and Joel Embiid, to me, are the ones who best combine individual excellence and team success. And if you want to say, you know, Dame Lillard, okay, it's fine, but the Blazers right now are, you know, slotted fifth in the West. That's not generally where the MVP comes from, the fifth-place team. But individually, he's been outstanding, and when you consider everything the Blazers have lost in terms of injuries and the way he's kept them going, yeah, it's really impressive. He deserves to be on the ballot. But the top of the ballot, to me, the top two spots are, generally speaking, reserved for the guys whose teams are actual contenders. And the Blazers might be there by the end, for all I know, when they get C.J. McCollum back, when they get Nurkic back. They might be there. And Dame Lillard might end up being part of this, the stronger part of this discussion. But we're not there yet.
Howard, obviously you talk about precedent. We know not just LeBron in the regular season, but what he does and has and probably will again accomplish in the playoffs. A different reality for Joel Embiid and the Sixers. Also a different regime. There's a new head coach. There's a new, what is Daryl Morey, president of basketball operations. And it feels like there's a new vibe, at least right now in Philly. What is the degree to which you take the Sixers seriously as an actual championship contender?
I do take them seriously as a championship contender. I don't know that they're, you know, light years ahead of where they were the last couple of years. It's the same, you know, basic core and some of the same concerns. But Embiid himself is playing at a higher level. And that's the thing. Like, sometimes, you know, the teams that take a leap from perennial, you know, first or second round team to, you know, or maybe they made an appearance in the conference finals, but to a team that you really take seriously, sometimes it's because they, you know, acquired that third star. Sometimes it's because the stars you already have took a leap, and Embiid took a leap. He's obviously got himself in better shape. He's playing, I think, a really aggressive and efficient brand of basketball right now. He's leading them. And so that gives you the sense that they can do this, and they play defense at a high level as well. The hitch for them, as it has been, is what do they do in crunch time? Because Embiid is not a creator. He's not LeBron. He's not Steph Curry. He's not James Harden. He's not a guy who you just say, put the ball in his hands and go get me something. That's not how he's built as a 7-footer. So then it's, well, is it Ben Simmons? But Ben Simmons doesn't shoot, and Ben Simmons doesn't want to drive in crunch time because he doesn't want to go to the line. So is it Tobias Harris? And Tobias is a guy who actually can do a lot of things with the ball in his hands, but has not generally been viewed as, you know, as a go-to guy. He would take issue with that, and he's had some really nice moments, in fact, including this season, as being a crunch time guy. So the question for them is going to be, if it's, you know, when you're going up against the Nets, who in crunch time have three different guys who could, you know, do a ton with the ball in their hands and just create out of thin air. I don't know if they'll stop them, the Nets. You know, the Nets aren't great defensively, but the Nets have all these dynamic weapons, and the Sixers, that's not the way they're built. So that's going to be the question that I think people will still have.
Howard Beck here on the show. Howard, if like all, you know, worthy radio hosts, if I can just compare the Nets to WandaVision real quick. I hated WandaVision the first two episodes and railed against it, and now I'm eating my words, even though the first two episodes were terrible. And I've similarly been, I mean, look, I'm wowed by the Nets. I get the talent. I haven't been able to get on the belief bandwagon talking about real championship expectations. You're in Brooklyn. They're obviously playing at a remarkable level in general against teams over 500. I mean, you can go down with or without, you know, one of those three guys in their trio. They've been amazing. Do you want to talk me and Nets skeptics into the Nets come the playoffs? Are you a full-on believer?
No, I'm not. I'm still not. I know they've won six in a row. I know they've done most of that without Kevin Durant. I know they've beaten some really good teams along the way. I'm still not entirely sold. Their success in the postseason is still predicated on an assumption that, well, one of two assumptions. There's the camp who believe the defense will get just good enough. They won't necessarily, they're not going to go, you know, acquire, you know, your Rudy Gobert or something. They're not going to go get some real big difference maker, especially at center. This is who they are. This is their personnel, but they'll get better just by time together, and you know their switching scheme will do enough to make them an average defense. And if they can just be average defensively and have an all-time historic elite offense, then they can win it all. That's one camp. Another one is that the defense doesn't matter at all. They're so overpowering offensively that even a modicum of defense in crunch time will be enough. And those are both fair positions, I think. But I remain skeptical, not because of chemistry. Like, they've put the chemistry concerns or those questions, I think they've put to rest. They clearly function really well together and at a really high level offensively. There's no worries about who's got the ball in his hands and who's controlling the offense. Like, that's all been fine. But they do have some depth issues, they for sure. And they do have some size issues, for sure. And maybe they'll rectify those through the buyout market or something else. But if not, if this is a group they go into the playoffs with, I think there is some vulnerability. But then the East is really unsettled. You know, I mean, I don't know that there are clear cut favorites in the East, but there's not one team that you say that's the one you can count on coming out. It could be Milwaukee, could be Brooklyn, could be Philly. Maybe Boston gets their stuff together and it's them. I don't know, but no one's got a stranglehold on this. They've all got their warts.
Howard Beck here on the show. And you brought up Gobert, Utah. I mean, I've watched a bunch of their games. They play great. I just have trouble getting my mind around believing in teams in a half of the NBA bracket that has LeBron James. I just, you know, it doesn't matter what the team is. It dampens my belief in the non-LeBron teams now in the Western Conference. Is that wrong? Am I missing something? Or are you in the same mindset when you look at what Utah's done and try to project what they're going to do come the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, you know, the, you know, past results do not guarantee future, whatever they say. But when's the last time that LeBron was healthy and his team didn't make the finals? Like, I mean, he doesn't. I think that's a really steep climb for anybody. My thing with the Jazz from the start has been, and this is, you know, just even over the last couple of years, as they've been, you know, they're at a whole other level right now, but it's still essentially the same personnel. Mike Conley's been much better this year than he was in year one with them. But the question for the Jazz has been all along, like, you can play to your fullest. You can get and they are. They're maximizing everything they've got there. And Donovan Mitchell is a star, and Rudy Gobert is a star, and Mike Conley is a guy who, you know, perennial should have been an all-star during his years in Memphis. And then they've got a bunch of really, really good guys, you know, good players, shooters, and they all play on a string together, and they're great as a collective. But when you come up against a LeBron James and an Anthony Davis, it still becomes about, okay, well, how do you deal with them? And you can turn it around and say, well, how are they going to stop Donovan Mitchell? You know, like, all right, that's fine. But Donovan Mitchell is not the same level as LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And the Jazz, you know, who's guarding LeBron? Royce O'Neal, probably. And then, you know, maybe some Bogdanovich and some Joe Ingles. And like, but I don't – like, that still becomes the question. And the Jazz can win the regular season, just as we've seen the Bucks win the regular season. It doesn't mean that you are – as well suited for certain matchups. And so, you know, the Jazz will be phenomenal. I have no doubt about it. And they've been a great team and they're legit and nobody should denigrate anything that they've done. It's still about whether you can take 4 out of 7 from the Lakers or maybe even the Clippers. And given the strength of the Clippers is also these, you know, supreme wing players and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, I would ask the same question in that case, who's guarding them?
Howard Beck on the program. Howard, last one for you, and then we'll definitely give you some what the Beck's on the way out, just so you can savor the magic of using your name you know, to make it sound like, you know, what the heck. So I understand, I do, the players' lack of desire to play in an All-Star game given the circumstances. And I understand Adam Silver and the NBA leadership's desire to, as much as they can, make good on contracts and try to make money for what is a business. Do you see if you were in charge for a day, is there a scenario, is there an outcome that you would have pushed for? Is there an easy answer in what should have happened with the All-Star game?
I mean, there are no easy answers as long as this pandemic is still going. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not comfortable with the idea that they're going to do this, but it's you know, it's not my money that's at stake. It's the league's money and the players' money, and it should be noted it's not just the league that stands to make whatever tens of millions. It's and the network, obviously, Turner Sports wants this to go on because it's the money that they've already invested in this event through the TV contract with the league. So Turner Sports wants it. The NBA wants it. I think the players, by and large, probably want it. There's been some, you know, vocal voices of dissent, but whatever they make, whatever the league makes, 50% of that goes to the players via the collective bargaining agreement, and that's to all the players, not just the All-Stars. So it's in everybody's interest to still have it. I think if there's one thing we can at least kind of comfort ourselves with as outsiders to this, as observers of it, is the NBA has generally done things right. Like there's no perfect system for shutting out the virus, short of a bubble, which they did very well last summer. In this case, it's the same trade-off or the same, you know, risk reward that they're playing with every game of the regular season, which is, can we do this in a way that's safe enough, as safe as can be? Do I have faith that the league is going to do this as safe as they possibly can? Yeah, I think that they will put all the right policies in place and they will do this as safe as they possibly can. Does that mean that it's foolproof and that no one's going to get the virus and then possibly take it back to their teams? Like, that's the scary part, and that's the risk, but that's the risk that everybody is dealing with every day right now on some level. So I would have felt better if they just didn't have it. I don't think it's necessary. It's just an All-Star game. Who cares? Pick the All-Stars, put it in the history books, give them the weekend off, move on. I think that's, you know, the better scenario, but easy for me to say. It's not my tens of millions at stake.
Dude, that was such a good interview. How the Beck are you so good at this? That's the question that I have for
what
you, Howard.
The Beck?
It's so good, isn't it? So good.
That's incredible.
Howard Beck, you're a good man. I hope you and the family are staying healthy and staying safe and staying sane. Appreciate you, my friend.
All the same to you, my friend. Thank you. Take care.
All right, buddy. Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. Good stuff. And by the way, to J-Dub and Matthew and Jason and Brian, the folks in Boise offering to take us to the blue turf and take us water rafting when we get to, I'm in. 100% in. Maybe we'll try to get Tom to come out to Boise as part of his, when he shows up, Tom Benedetto and I. You know, maybe we'll, you know, maybe you guys take us water rafting and we'll buy some drinks. It feels like a good deal. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I want to hit this LeBron thing a little bit more, and we'll hang out with Andrew Bogish when we come back next here on CBS Sports Radio.